yourself.
Do I have you now?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay. So, you know, we are pre-recording the interview, and once we're done, I go in and edit the audio, mostly for, you know, volume consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm done with that, I upload it to Spreaker, and it gets passed through to iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit www.biteradio.me. Today, my special returning guest is Joanne DiMaggio, and we will be discussing her newest book, Soulmates and Twin Souls, Traveling Companions on the Road to Enlightenment. Soulmate, you've heard that phrase everywhere. Everyone, it seems, is searching for that elusive, perfect romantic partner. But in reality, a soulmate is not always a love interest. Your parents, your children, your friends, and your work colleagues can all be soulmates. But there's a flip side to the soulmate relationship. Some are actually cellmates who keep you emotionally imprisoned. Joanne is an internationally recognized researcher, teacher, author, and past life therapist. She has published 7 books, including the one we will be discussing today. And she has also authored hundreds of magazine articles for both mainstream and esoteric audiences. In 1987, Joanne began devoting all of her time to her esoteric studies, specializing in past life exploration, research, and therapy. The years she has spent researching and working on her own past lives, coupled with her experience as the director of her own past life research organization, gives clients the comfort of knowing they are working with someone who has firsthand knowledge of the emotional, physical, psychological, and spiritual experience of a past life journey. She eventually combined her passion for soul writing with her knowledge of reincarnation, and today is considered a respected expert in both fields. For more information, you can visit Joanne's website, which is www.joannedimaggio.com, and that's JoanneDimaggio.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Joanne to the show. Good day, Joanne.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you, and it's always a joy to talk with you. I remember back and talking about soul writing, and it seems like a long, long time ago.
Does seem like it.
Absolutely. So let's start with first, you know, what inspired you to write this book? You know, why this topic and why now?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I didn't have any intention of writing about the soulmate relationship because I was, you know, interested in other aspects of reincarnation. Although, you know, every client I've had over the last 38 years has been all about finding their soulmate. But a family member, I saw them over a holiday maybe about 2 years ago, and said that they had gone through a divorce. And I was shocked because they hadn't been married that long. And he said that his wife had been doing readings about soulmates and twin souls and decided he was neither one, and that she was going to leave him to go find her own, what she perceived as her own soulmate or twin soul. And so, you know, he referred to all that work. He goes, that's a bunch of BS, you know. And I'm like, oh, ouch, that's what I do for a living. I thought, well, then I started looking around and paying more attention to the use of that term. And I started seeing it everywhere. It was in the AARP magazine, for instance, a whole article about how people over 55 are looking for their soulmates. I've seen it on television commercials for paper towels. So it's just prevalent. And I thought, they're all thinking that a soulmate is a romantic partner. And I know from my own studies that it isn't. So I thought, time to set the record straight, which is one of the things I love doing, is to do research into a topic and to find out what other professionals are saying about it. So that's what was the incentive for me to do the book.
Wow, yeah. I'm sure that was kind of a surprise coming from the family member. Now, you know, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, parents, children, friends, even colleagues can be soulmates. So,
right.
And, you know, and with your male relative, and having that, it seems like, you know, some people that when they buy, you know, when they look for that soulmate, are looking for someone outside that romantic, are looking for that romantic. And so, first part of the question is that, you know, regarding, you know, other than romantic types of relationships, how many soulmates can you have, I guess?
Well, I don't know that there's a limit on the number. Basically, the definition that I give of what a soulmate is someone with whom you've had a past life connection. Mm. So if you think about the fact that we travel together as a soul pod, as a family of souls, and we've been together with the same group of souls since the beginning of time. The only difference is that in each subsequent lifetime, we may change our gender and we may change our role. So in other words, your mother in this life could have been your husband in a previous life, but it's the same soul. So the same group goes, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And as a result of that, they know you on a very intimate level. They know what presses your buttons. They know what you're working on. So with that definition, you could see that it's not always going to be a romantic partner. It could be, and it's not always limited to male-female relationships either, because it could be your parents. It could be your brothers or sisters. Your children are soulmates, your relatives, your colleagues, your teachers, your friends. They're just simply companions that have come with you into this life to help you and help themselves resolve issues that can best be solved by interacting with each other.
Yeah. Well, so basically it's kind of any soul connection that would be like a soul mate.
Right. If there are people in your circle, you can pretty much be assured that they've been with you before. Now, some of them have been, you know, in your inner circle, obviously. So they're the ones that are really closest to you. But then you've got people in the periphery who may come in and out. They may opt to join you in a life or may opt not to join you in a particular life. Depends on what you're working on and whether they want to volunteer to come in with you to help you with that issue that you decided you wanted to finish up.
Yeah. Now, when you mentioned, pushing buttons, think of so many parent-child, relationships. It's one of those cases where both parts of that relationship know buttons, you know, and it seems that that is maybe an area that both need to kind of give attention to.
Yeah. If you're, especially if you're aware of it, if you're like my own daughter must have been my mother in a previous lifetime, because sometimes she acts like it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we pick our parents. So that's a selection that the soul makes in the pre-life planning session. I want this soul for my mother. I want this soul for my father. And I want them for a very specific reason. There's something I can learn from them that I cannot learn from any other soul as my mother or my father. So that's one of the questions I ask when we do the regression that includes the pre-life planning session. You know, why did you choose that woman for your mother? What is it that she brings to the table that nobody else did? And then when you look at it from that point of view, you can see the relationship in a completely different light, and it makes perfect sense to you about why you're together, whether it's, you know, for positive or negative, however you perceive of it. I don't ever perceive mm-hmm. something as negative, but there's a lesson, always a lesson behind the interactions that we have with members of our soul family.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, the idea of choosing one's parents ahead of time, I often thought, what was I thinking? You know, but it's interesting, you know, because you mentioned mother and negativity. My mother was a very, very negative. I mean, she saw the worst in everything, you know, and while growing up, you know, it was, for me, it was irritating in a way, because I just wasn't, you know, that just wasn't my nature. Mm-hmm. And then it's only, you know, after years of, you know, looking at things and recognizing that, you know, that negativity was so programmed that it put me on a path of positivity, you know, switching things around. So, but when you're going through it, sometimes it's hard to see.
Well, sure, you can't see the forest for the trees. You're in the middle of it. But if you step back, if you have the wherewithal to know to step back and to look at it with some objectivity, you can, and you ask yourself that a very important question: what am I learning from this? What's mm-hmm. the lesson in this for me? And then suddenly, the little light bulb goes off. You have your aha moment, and then suddenly you look at them with different eyes. You know, you see them that they are truly loving souls who just come to assist you to complete your unfinished business.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to, you know, give that attention. Otherwise, that unfinished business can continue, wouldn't you?
Oh,
isn't that correct?
Yeah. Oh, it continues on and on and on. And then you got new unfinished business that you didn't even realize you hadn't finished. Will come up. But, you know, you can look, not only look to the family members and friends and stuff, but sometimes, you know, they're in a group situation, like the congregants at your church, or maybe they're members of an organization that you're part of, or maybe they're your classmates or your work colleagues. I've seen that, that group incarnation sort of dynamic at play with many people, so that they're dealing with them not just one-on-one, but they're dealing with a whole group energy that's, sort of pressing on the same button with them. And so I've learned the most that I've about myself through my interactions at church and through some organizations I belong to. And I think it's because we're all there for the same reason. We all have our issues that we're dealing with. And so it's more pronounced in an environment like that than it would be in more of a mainstream kind of environment, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a mirror, you know, to what you're going through. And you know, if you're in a group like that, seeing it in multiple occasions, then it would seem that it would, you know, drive home, you know, this is something to be looked at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, one of the things that intrigued me about this particular book was one of the comments that some soulmates are actually cellmates who keep you emotionally imprisoned. And you know, I kind of smiled when I read that, because, you know, in the course of, you know, interacting with people who have told me about soulmates and things kind of go awry, you know, that it's like, you know, that cellmate kind of situation appears. So can you tell us a little bit more about that situation and its purpose, I guess?
Sure. Well, their purpose is to create chaos. And that chaos challenges us to address the karma that exists between us. So they come cloaked as soulmates. So they look like a soulmate when they're coming into your life. That's how you get fooled. But they've come in with a completely different agenda. there are sometimes, if you're been working on yourself and you're high on the awareness level, you may, the moment you meet them, you may experience an immediate threat from them. You're still attracted to them. There's no doubt about it. You still want to be with them, but there's just something there. You can't be around them without being on guard. Because on some level, you feel like, oh, there's something going on here. So so sometimes it's very difficult to identify, but the case studies that I put in my book, I would say that almost all of those ended up being soulmate relationships. That started out as soulmate relationships, but there's that element of emotional imprisonment. They keep their thumb down on you. They'll keep you from achieving all that you're here to achieve. They'll sabotage you. And some of them will do it in a very subtle way.
Mm-hmm.
Others will be more obvious. And it just depends on what they agreed to come in to do for you or with you to enable you. In the end, it's the same identical experience as a soulmate because you're learning something from it. But you're learning it sometimes in an emotionally painful way.
Yeah. So in that particular circumstance, is the, I guess, the ultimate goal or lesson to break free of that imprisonment?
Exactly. It's for you to recognize that you don't need them. You don't need, see, this whole thing with the soulmate relationship, I was surprised. It goes back thousands and thousands of years. The whole idea started back in ancient times. They actually believed that Zeus split a soul in half. And ever since then, we have been thinking we're not whole, we're half. And we're looking for that other half of us. And so there's this endless search, like I can't be whole unless I find him or her to be in my life with me. I found the end goal of my research and dealing with clients that I've dealt with over 37 years, 38 years, is that the realization that you're already whole. That never happened. That soul was never split in half. There is no elusive other half of you out there anywhere. You are whole. Your creator created you whole. And once you have that realization, then the attitude changes, the perspective changes, and then that other soul does not have the hold over you that it had before when you thought it held the key to your happiness and your fulfillment.
Wow. So in a case like that, then is there no longer a pursuit of maybe finding a soulmate, you know, because if you feel whole, then there's really no need to search.
Well, you're searching, but for a different reason. So you're not searching because you want to be, because you think that you're not complete unless this other person is in your life. You're already complete. You're complete and they're complete. And then you can come together without this agenda kind of going on between you and a true level of love on that soul level, that's what you're really yearning for. And that's a completely different level than a physical love level.
Yeah. So now when it comes to identifying, you know, you mentioned that soulmates, we've had a previous connection with at some point. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, anything from, you know, a coworker to, you know, friends. When it comes time to, what would help me identify an individual as a soulmate?
Well, it's easier than you think because we've memorized each other over the centuries. So when you meet somebody that falls in that category, you feel an instant attraction to them as if you've known them a long time, and you have known them a long time. There's a depth of connectedness between you. Sometimes it makes absolutely no sense. You have nothing in common. Under normal circumstances, you don't feel as though you would be that person's friend or that person's confidant or lover or whatever. But if you look into their eyes, feel the essence of their soul, you can usually identify that they've been with you before. And the other way of doing it, obviously, is through a past life regression. That's where you can really identify individual souls who've been with you before.
Yeah. So you know, recognizing, having that recognition in someone and the attraction, does it also, you know, work, you know, with a cellmate, you know, that identification and maybe repulsion from an individual?
Yeah, but for you to stay with a cellmate, you'd have to have an attraction. So it starts
okay.
with the soulmate. You're operating under okay. the guise that it is the soulmate, and you're attracted to that person. But you don't know their agenda. You don't know what's going on. You don't know how this is going to play out. So when you first meet, it could be all wine and roses. They can make promises to you. They could, you know, flatter you. You find that you want to be with them. Because it could be, and this is important, there's nothing wrong with who they are and what they're doing. They're not bad people. They're not evil people.
Mm-hmm.
They just agreed to play a role. And how you respond to it is up to you. It's not, you know, not that they're doing anything. It's how you respond to them. So I think that's important to be able to, if you're attracted to somebody, male, female, friend, coworker, whatever, it's all right to establish the relationship, but then watch for different signs that there's another agenda going on here. And if that's the case, then you have to step back and go, why is this happening? Why is this pattern repeating itself in this relationship? What is it that I need to know so that I could move through this and move past it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, now, part of the title of the book also includes twin souls. So, and now, is that different from twin flame, which I've heard thrown?
No, it's the same. People use the term interchangeably, yeah.
Okay. So how do twin souls differ from, you know, soulmates?
From a soulmate?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's easy. You only have one. You only have one twin soul, whereas you have many, 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 many soulmates. You come in with the same purpose. You have a common mission. So you're in separate bodies, but your minds are thinking alike.
Hmm.
There's a lack of competition between you. You're working on the same issue, so it's like a two-for-one kind of a deal. And it's not necessary that you be incarnate at the same time. So you could be working with them on the other side. You could both be on the earth and never meet. A good example of a twin soul relationship for those of your listeners who know Edgar Casey,
mm-hmm.
And his work was Mr. Casey and his secretary Gladys Davis were twin souls. When Mr. Casey died in 1945, Gladys's sole mission was to safeguard those readings that he did, those 14,000 readings he did. So she safeguarded those basically with her life and enabled the legacy of the Casey teachings to live on. So although he had passed over, he was no longer giving readings. She took what he had already done, and she made sure that generations long after her death would still be able to benefit from the Casey teachings. So that's basically an example of a twin soul relationship.
Okay. So how do we identify, I guess, you know, twin souls? Or is there even a need to have an awareness of who the twin soul may be?
Well, you don't need an awareness of them. But I think if you know somebody's working on the same mission that you're working on, you know, you could identify them that way. For me, I wrote about T.J. Davis in my previous book about Edgar Casey giving a reading to this baby boy when he was 2 days old, and it was said he was a reincarnation of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander the Great. Well, T.J. Lived with Casey for the first 8 years of T.J.'s life, and Mr. Casey passed. And T.J. Developed a very disreputable reputation. in the ARE, and nobody really wanted anything to do with him, and they felt as though he didn't fulfill Mr. Casey's prediction that he could, that soul could do for the world what Jefferson did for this country. Well, I wanted to find out why. So when I finally met him in 1996, we became friends, and I started to work with him on his biography. It took me 8 years, but I finally got it done. And that's the book, Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. But in the course of that, we were working, occasionally we would work together on Casey-related subjects. So occasionally he'd come and he'd give a talk about his time with Edgar Casey or what Edgar Casey was teaching and how he was interpreting it. And we would talk on the phone all the time, and he would encourage me and support me. He would tell me, oh, Mr. Casey's so proud of you and the work that you're doing on behalf of him and the ARE. And so he'd come up with ideas, you know, let's do this, let's do that. So in many ways, I felt like he was my twin soul, because we were both working on safeguarding the Casey legacy, the case. We were both promoting the Casey teachings. We both had the same agenda. There was no competition between us, no one-upmanship between us. And so now he's passed on, and so he's on the other side. And I find myself occasionally talking to him like, you know, what am I supposed to do now? But that's an example of a a twin soul is a soulmate, but it's at this other higher level. You've got this higher purpose in the purpose of the relationship.
So can there be multiple, like in soulmates, multiple twin souls?
No, there's just one twin soul.
Just one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So your identification with him as a twin soul, I mean, that's it. It's going to be you and them working together.
That's it
with
for
them.
This life. No, but okay. He's still working with me from the other side, so I can't okay. say that he's not. You know, he's. I mean, right. There have been times I've said, hey, what are you doing now that you're on the other side? You're just kind of hanging around with Edgar Casey and just, you know, and then I'll say, I'd like to hear from you, and then that night I'll have a dream about him. So I know he's listening to me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, or, you know, the other thing, I have a chapter in my book, it's the very last chapter, about a mirrored soul. And a mirrored soul, which I wasn't going to write about. I'd heard the term. One of the volunteers for my research project, because I had 10 volunteers who shared their story. We did a regression, and they shared the story of their soulmates with me. She kept saying she had a mirrored soul. And I heard the term, but it wasn't that common. So I wasn't going to include it in the book. But that was a case where it was a soul that they had this long-distance relationship for the longest time, got married, were together a few years, and he passed over. And as it turned out, he actually never had a past life with her. He was her emissary. He had been sent because this was her last lifetime, and so he came to help prepare her for finishing up this lifetime, and then that would be it for her. I don't meet very many people who don't have to come back again. Mostly, there are a lot of people who say they don't want to come back.
My hand is raised.
That doesn't mean it's their last lifetime. I say, are you sure you finished everything there is to finish?
Wow.
So anyway, yeah, that was a soul experience on a whole different level.
Yeah, that's very different. I had never heard that term before. Mm-hmm. So, wow. So now with the 10 individuals, volunteers that you had, can you maybe give us just an example, you know, or maybe one or two, just, you know, highlighting, you know, how their story kind of supports mm-hmm. the book?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, most of them had a experience with a spouse or a romantic partner. I had one that was her mother. It was a mother-daughter relationship. I had another that was a brother-sister relationship. But most of them were the male-female relationship. One in particular, in this life, her name is Holly, and his name is Jack. In a prior lifetime, her name was Giselle, and his was Xavier. He was her uncle in the previous life. She lived in France until her parents died. Then she traveled to New York to live with this uncle. And Giselle was interested in doing design work, clothing design. And she was coming into a lot of money. She was coming into an inheritance, and her uncle knew that. So he had her come to New York. He wanted to marry her off and then work with her new husband to take her inheritance, but of course she thwarted that. So that was the setup for the previous lifetime. In this lifetime, she has come in wanting both emotional and financial security. That was the most important thing. And you often can make out what the issues are by listening to some of the phrases that clients will use in a regression. So things that she said were, I never got to finish. My uncle sidelined me. I felt like a prisoner. I was unable to say or do anything. I had no control. I wasn't very happy. Turns out that her uncle Xavier reincarnated in this life as a childhood friend, Jack. And Holly was living in Virginia at the time, and Jack lured her to New York to be with him, and he offered her the very thing she was looking for, the financial and emotional security. And then once she got to New York, they married, and then she started to work in his, I think he had a bar or something, and she was working there. But she was also an esthetician. That was her chosen career in this life. And so those same phrases that she used to describe her uncle, I never got to finish, meaning I never got to do this style work that I wanted to do. My uncle sidelined me. Well, in this life, her husband sidelined her. I felt like a prisoner. She often would say, you know, when she would contact me, she had blockaded herself in a room because she had to hide from him. She said, wow. I felt like I had no control over my life. I wasn't very happy. So that whole pattern repeated itself. But instead of it being a niece and an uncle, it was a husband and a wife. So that's an example of, and then, you know, we did the regression. We were able to draw the parallels. I did some soul writing with her, which is writing in an altered state of consciousness. And she was able to figure that out, that, the whole lesson for her was that she had to stand on her own two feet and not look to somebody else to take care of her, to provide for her. She could do it herself. So that was her big lesson, and I do believe she's gone on to really work through that. So that's just one of, like I said, there are 10 really fascinating stories. One in particular, another one was about I had a fellow that I've had in previous books. He went back to a very ancient Egyptian life and had a his sister in this life was with him. But she's been with him since the beginning of time. They had extremely competitive relationship, and that played itself out again. So that's what it is. The regression identifies the original issue, the pattern, identifies the pattern. And then when they look at their current life, I'll say to them, well, what do you have in common with who you were back then? What are the parallels, the behavior patterns that are the same? And by looking at that, they can see that the thread is running through these lifetimes, and then they can take the steps that they need to correct it.
Now, a lifetime in ancient Egypt to, you know, having a current dynamic, the same, that seems like an awfully long time, and there probably had to have been lives in between with the same thing.
Oh, yeah, they have. But, you know, when I do a regression, what I do is I ask spirit to take them to the life in which this started. So it's the originating event. So if it takes them back a couple thousand years, that's what happens. Some of them will go back that far. Others will go back just a lifetime or two. It depends on what they're working on in this. You know, when you plan your life, and when you're in the afterlife and you're planning your next lifetime, you're going to look at all of the circumstances that you're going to be born into to see if this is the best life to work on, you know, problems X, Y, and Z. And so this competitive situation between the two that started in ancient Egypt, he just decided this was the best life for them to work through it. They, you know, from her point of view, it hasn't been worked through, but from his, it has. So there you go.
So in cases like that, then it takes both individuals. I mean, because if he felt he worked through it and she did not, does it then continue until she does?
If she may have to deal with it with somebody else.
Okay.
If the overlying theme is being highly competitive, that isn't going to end. That's not just between her and her brother. Mm. That's going to go with everybody she meets. And until she recognizes that, see, that's what the beauty of all this is that you're not only helping each other with these issues, you're helping yourself and you're helping others around you. So this starts to go out into a circle. So, you know, the initiating event was the competition between her and her brother. But that sense of being highly competitive is something that is part of who she is. And it's, inevitably, it's going to affect the people she works with. It's going to her if she marries, her children, everybody in her inner circle. And so that it just starts to spiral out. And a lot of people are affected by the exact same issue. So, you know, her brother is able to see it and free himself from it by his choices, I'm not going to be a part of this competitive relationship, then he's set free to go on and do something else, whereas she'll still be mired in that competitive environment.
Okay, so one is not held back with, you know,
No, and okay. Like I said, it's not that she's bad, it's not that she's evil, or, you know, it's just that they have that common purpose, that common issue, and they've come together to work through it. But you have free choice, free will. If you choose not to work on something, then you just don't work on it, that's all.
Okay, and then if that's the case, you're going to attract the same challenge, you know, maybe with different individuals.
And not only that, but if you don't finish it up in this life when you're given that opportunity, it's going to go on the back burner and you're going to bring it back with you because it's unfinished. And it's got to get finished. Like your Casey said, whatever starts on earth has to finish on earth. So if you haven't figured that out. It's like going to school, you know, and you've got certain courses that you've signed up for. You don't complete that course and pass, you're going to have to take it again. Yeah. So the goal is not to take it again. You don't want to do that. So the more aware you are, and most people, honestly, they'll go through their entire life without even having their awareness.
Wow.
You know, they just don't know that that's what's going on.
Because
they don't believe in reincarnation or whatever, you know. And so they won't go looking for it in all the right places. So, it's right in front of them, but they're like, they just don't see it. So I think people that do believe in reincarnation, who do come for regressions, who do want to do some work on themselves, those people are a step ahead in terms of soul growth.
Yeah.
And maybe somebody who doesn't.
Wow. We're almost toward the end of the show, but I want to just go back to Twin Souls for a couple of questions I had. One was that you indicated that, like, from you and the gentleman, you know, with him on the other side and you as being Twin Souls. What happens, like, when you cross over? I mean, does that then continue there, or do you kind of set up for a new lifetime with a new twin soul?
Well, it wouldn't be a new twin soul. It would be the same one, but in a different, obviously in a different body. I think that, you know, when you're in the afterlife, you're doing a lot of studying. You're doing a lot of reflecting. You're looking at the previous lives, figuring out, you know, what classes did you take that you passed? Which ones do you have to repeat? Which ones haven't you taken yet? And then you design a life. And then I think that the, because I remember my pre-life planning session very, very clearly. And I remember he was there. He was standing in the back with his arms folded. And I'm up there with, you know, with the council of elders planning this life. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. And then I said, is he coming with me? and then the answer was, well, maybe, maybe not. And if he does, he may not be as involved. So I felt very, very fortunate that our paths crossed in this life because it wasn't easy to find him. And he wasn't looking for me, but I was definitely looking for him. And it took us a long time before we met. And then we had years where we were not together. There were, we'd come together, be together a few months and something would happen and we would go our separate ways and a couple of years would go by and our paths would cross again. It was a very bizarre on and off kind of a relationship. But when it was on, it was really on. And we, if he had been, close, maybe, you know, he was about 15 years older than me. And he had a lot of health issues. So I think if he had been younger and he had been healthy, we would have been able to do a lot more together than what we ended up doing. But he certainly was there for me in spirit. And, you know, I would give anything to be able to pick up the phone and talk to him again because he was the most fascinating man I'd ever really met. And the fact that he knew Edgar Cayce, That was the icing on the cake, you know. So I consider myself very fortunate for the time we did have together.
Great. Well, this is a perfect time. I just wanted to let the listeners know that on May 3rd, shortly around the corner, that you're going to be at ARE's annual reincarnation conference.
Right.
And you're going to be presenting the idea of finishing your unfinished business, past lives, and pre-life planning session.
Right.
So, yeah, so anyway, for people who are in the area or you can want to go to the ARE conference, they can visit your website, and you have a link on your upcoming events that people can join you there.
It's in person and on Zoom, so if you can't make it to the beach, you can definitely see it. So I'm going to be on Saturday morning, May 3rd, 9 to noon. It's called the Souls in Transit Conference, but it's their annual reincarnation conference.
Great. That sounds great. Yeah, I remember I visited ARE once when I was in Virginia Beach, and it's just a fascinating place.
It is. It's a spiritual home for so many of us.
Absolutely. Well, Joanne, what do you hope that people are going to take away from reading Soulmates and Twin Souls, Traveling Companions on the Road to Enlightenment?
Well, I think it's what I said initially, that you're you're whole unto yourself, that you don't need to have another soul to complete you, but to recognize that the souls that are in your life are there for a reason. There's a very important lesson that they're assisting you with, and just sort of, you know, if you can step back, look at it objectively, ask yourself, what am I learning from my relationship with this person? And I think that you'll find that it'll very much enrich your life, your relationship with them, and move you to a whole different level. So that's what I hope you do.
Great. Well, I want to remind everyone that by visiting Joanne's website, joannedimaggio.com, you can find out more about this book as well as her other 6 books. And she has some wonderful blog entries for you to check out. So, Joanne, I really want to thank you for your time today. I always enjoy speaking with you.
Oh, I always enjoy talking with you, too, especially on this topic that I know and love so much. So thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for today's episode of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.